So a few months ago, I saw this video on YouTube about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And I remember watching it and stopping and thinking, this cannot be right. It took everybody by surprise. It was very well researched. We went and followed up and did our own research to make sure that it was right before I started talking about it. It was very professional, a little bit nutty at first because it's a conspiracy theory. But it was a conspiracy theory about a 29-year-old bartender randomly becoming a socialist hero in the U.S. Congress. That's crazy. According to the video, AOC's rise to stardom was no accident because AOC had been primed for the role. She had been coached on every single policy point that she makes. The real surprise was that this huge story came out of nowhere and went viral instantly. It was not the work of reporters from the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, Fox News, New York Times. There was no news organization behind it. The claims in the video hadn't appeared anywhere in the mainstream media. They hadn't even been discussed by conservative media. When I watched it, I thought, this is either really ballsy as a lie or it's true. It was from an anonymous YouTube person who broke a massive news story. Nobody in the media seemed to even be aware of the story. Not only that, this is a story that has impact on our culture. This would not have been possible 10 years ago. Some guy who you've never heard of breaking a story this big. I don't know if it could have happened 5 years ago. Well, I was immediately enthralled. The video seemed like just one more sign that the mainstream media is fully collapsing. Naturally, we wanted to know more about the disruptive person behind the video. But what we found were a bunch of videos similar to the AOC video on a YouTube account that has only been active for a year, and a guy called Mr. Reagan on YouTube and Twitter. The name Mr. Reagan, an homage to Ronald Reagan, the great communicator. His mission statement is a quote from Ronald Reagan. It's, quote, "The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so," end quote. In the culture war, Mr. Reagan is railing against mainstream media, socialism, and identity politics, and he is using facts to back it up. He's doing it a new way. He eschews all frill, placing his unabashedly conservative stance at the center of his videos, which is a dangerous thing to do lately, especially for him. He lives in Los Angeles, and he's on YouTube. He can reach a million people with a rant that he filmed on his phone. It's not easy. He's been shadow banned, blocked, reported, caught in algorithms, you name it, but he's still going. Without a doubt, he knows his politics, which only adds to the intrigue of this disruptive and mysterious kind of guy. The more of his videos I watched, the more I wondered, who is he? Does he really live in L.A.? Is he an open conservative? How does he survive, if so? Those are the surface questions. I had to do more digging than I expected, but his real name is Christopher Coles. He's a journalist and a fiction writer. He has two volumes of short stories, which are quite brilliant, Straight White Christian Male Volume 1 and Straight White Christian Male Volume 2. But there's not a lot of information beyond that. So I decided to fly him into our studios in Dallas. I figured the best way to really get some answers was to have him come here so we could talk face to face on this podcast. So my guest today is the unknown Christopher Coles, the man who is the very well-known Mr. Reagan, who has made it his mission to fight the radical left using humor and facts, and who may very well help take down the mainstream media in the process. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. I just really want to thank our sponsor of this podcast. They remind you that it takes about 45 minutes for police to respond to a home security alarm. I mean, that's almost an hour. That is crazy. But when you hear why it takes so long, you'll understand. When a home security system is triggered, most of the times police are just like, it's just a false alarm, because it is like in my house like 100 times. But not with Simply Safe Home Security. SimpliSafe is the only one that has video verification technology. It helps police get on the scene up to 3.5 times faster. I don't know. That might be helpful. You actually go to the top of the list. And again, SimpliSafe is the only one that can visually confirm that a break-in is happening, and they let the police know. That makes the response time about 7 minutes instead of 45. SimpliSafe. Protect your home, protect your family, every door, window, everything you need. SimpliSafe. They have a huge deal going on right now at simplisafe.com/Glenn Beck. You'll get a free HD security camera when you order. That's a $100 value. Get it now. It is simplisafe.com/Glenn Beck. Do it today. simplisafe.com/Glenn Beck. So should I call you Chris or Mr. Reagan?
Chris is fine.
Okay. Right. I assume Mr. Reagan comes from your love of Ronald Reagan.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, what was it that you loved about him?
Well, there were a lot of things. I mean, primarily in the 80s when I was growing up and Reagan was president, there was a sense that Christianity was important. You know, morality was important. Ethics were important. And I had that in my family. And Ronald Reagan actually reminded me a lot of my grandfather at the time. Mm-hmm. I saw Reagan and I saw somebody very much like, you know, my own family. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me my whole life. And he's obviously an icon of conservatism. Mm-hmm. So when I decided to do a channel, I didn't want to use my real name. I mean, who am I? You know, I was nobody. But Mr. Reagan, that's a name, you know, that sure. People would instantly know. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was more of a branding thing. It was very easy to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's strange because I was thinking about, I don't really know much about you. You're a little cagey on, but I don't know anything really about you. And that, you know, that used to be the norm for people who were journalists. They, you know, Peter Jennings. I knew he was a Canadian. I think that's about it.
Right.
Walter Cronkite. We didn't know anything about it. The guy was a communist, you know, at the end. Right. We're like, whoa, wait a minute. But now it's you kind of want to know who people are. So I know you live in Los Angeles. How did that happen and how is that working out for you?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. Growing up, I was a creative type. You know how... Jordan Peterson says that he's kind of like a liberal type person, like a leftist kind mm-hmm. of, but really he's conservative because mm-hmm. he's a rational person. Mm-hmm. You know, he sees the world and he accepts the reality that he lives in. Mm-hmm. And I'm exactly the same way. I think I have a very creative, what would kind of traditionally be considered like a more of a leftist brain. Mm-hmm. I think that's partially what gives me my perspective on politics. I know the failures of that mindset. Because I'm a creative person myself. I invent worlds. I love writing stories. Mm-hmm. I love writing fictions. And so for me, growing up, I thought, I want to get into the film industry. I want to be a writer. I used to watch The Twilight Zone, and I thought, when I was 13, I saw my first episode of The Twilight Zone. There was one in particular called Time Enough at Last. Do you know this episode?
It was the one with the Burgess Meredith.
Yep, Burgess Meredith. Yep. And my mind was blown. And I said, if I could write as well as this, I would be better than any writer living today. And so I was hooked at that point. You know, that point on, I was a writer in my mind. Mm-hmm. So I moved to Hollywood for those reasons. Didn't have the connections. Pretty much just a perpetual failure for many, many years. And then one day I thought, you know, let me do what they're doing on YouTube. Let me talk a little bit about the stuff that I believe in from my perspective. Because when you have a creative mind and you're not really, you don't have that conservative, logical brain, you can see why a romantic brain would fail in creating policy. Mm-hmm. Because there's these temptations to strive for a utopia that can't exist. Mm-hmm. I have that mm-hmm. temptation. But I fight it and I recognize, you know, the frailty of that. Like it will only lead to destruction. I mean, you can see what happened in Venezuela and USSR, mm-hmm. you know, in China, that, you know, just devastating tragedies.
What's funny is it's usually the artists that drive a society in mm-hmm. that direction. Mm-hmm. And then they're the first to be killed off.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, they're the ones who are writing the poetry of woe is man, mm-hmm. that actually pulls you back out of it, and they don't ever seem to learn the lesson.
No, I don't. I mean, artists are necessary, but they are very powerful. They're much more powerful than people think.
But I don't think people understand that. Because we don't spend the time, because I think I have an artist brain as well.
I was getting to that. I think you're kind of in there with me. Yeah.
And so I do see things differently, and I can relate on how people can see things that way. Mm-hmm. But people don't understand. In a theater, I want all of the lefties on stage, because they're probably pretty good at doing a show.
That's right.
But I want everyone who's a conservative running the box office. And if I don't have that, if I have the lefties in the box office and the conservatives on stage, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
It's a disaster. Yeah. And we need each other.
Yeah, we do. We do. Yeah, and it's a perfect analogy. It's a really beautiful analogy for, you know, what you're talking about, the theater, right? And the producer needs to be somebody with that sort of almost like a banker's mentality, right? Sort of divorced from emotion, right? What I would call dispassionate, right? I feel like politics needs to be dispassionate, because this is from a storyteller's point of view, but politics is all about ethical dilemmas, right? Do I let these 100 people die, or do I fix the situation so only 13 people over here die instead? Mm-hmm. That's a brutal situation, you know, but sometimes politicians have to make awful decisions like that. And it may not be that drastic, but there's always some kind of compromise that needs to be made. Some people are going to be hurt and some people are going to be benefited. And those are cold, calculated moves that need to be made by, you know, a calculating brain.
Yeah, because otherwise you get into where we are on the border. Where
exactly right. Yeah.
The United States is a lifeboat. Mm-hmm. It's a giant lifeboat. And right now, Central and South America are going down. They've hit an iceberg and they're going down, and nobody wants to be there. So they're coming here. Well, at some point, if you're in a lifeboat, you have to get away from the sea of people or everyone will die. Yep. You know, and we don't care about the ship going down. We care about the precious cargo of the people, because as long as we have the people, we can rebuild the ships.
That's right.
But you can't save everyone, and we're swamping our boats now, our lifeboats, and we're not going to be able to help anyone. And what's crazy is those who actually are behind all this, they know that. They know all that.
Yeah.
And that's not their goal, to help everyone.
Right.
But those who are, you know, saying, yeah, we should give health care to anybody who comes across our border. They're just not thinking it through.
And we need to let everybody come across the border at the same time. Yeah.
Right.
You know, that's something I've struggled with for some time, because I deal in motivations and intentions. That's what I'm always trying to figure out. What's somebody's motivation and what's their intention, right?
Stanislavski?
Yeah, it's not an actor thing. I didn't.
Intentions and obstacles?
No, right. I'm not method. All right. I'm not method. No, but it's really, that's just how you break down, like, what are you really trying to do here? You know, what is the point of communism? What is the point of capitalism? Right? Why do we have that institution? Capitalism is so unfair. You get these ridiculously rich people, and you get these ridiculously poor people with capitalism. How is that fair? But you realize, you know, if you really think about this, the motivation is, you know, back in the feudal times, you had the rich, you had the poor, and there was no movement. That was it. If you were born poor, you were going to stay poor. That was it. There was no choice. Now that we have capitalism, now that we have a market system, a poor person can become a rich person. And not only that, but as the rich get richer, the poor get richer too. Mm-hmm. And that was never true before. Capitalism actually makes that possible. Mm-hmm. So you're taking these poor wretches out of poverty and putting them into, like, the middle class, or at least the lower middle class. And that's a benefit. Even if the rich get ridiculously richer, I don't care. As long as we're keeping these people from starvation, our problem today is that the poor people are too fat. That's a good problem to have, right? Fixing that's a lot better than fixing starving children, you know. But, you know.
You say as long as we keep these people from starving. I would say as long as you keep the possibility alive that even the starving can become whatever it is they choose to become.
As much opportunity as possible.
Right.
100% agree with
right.
that. And you just don't get that with another system.
But haven't we, when you say capitalism, it tests horribly. But when, when you say free market,
yeah.
it tests like 70%
yeah.
Favorable.
It is funny how rhetoric changes people. Yeah. To me, it's all, you know,
the But when people kind of think of capitalism now, I think they think that America is a free market. We are less free as a market than they are in Sweden.
Absolutely right.
You know?
Yeah.
And the Swedes think we're nuts for what we're doing now.
And well, it varies state by state.
yeah. Texas is pretty
sweet. Texas is pretty good, yeah.
Texas is pretty good. But as a, overall, the free market is not free. Bill Gates couldn't have started Microsoft. I mean, that's according to Bill Gates now. The problem that he said that they had, they have now is Apple was smart. They put all of their people in Washington, D.C. to lobby, mm-hmm. and he didn't think that was necessary. Yep. Well, that's not a free market.
No. One thing I heard once was that if you're starting out a business, the only way to really do it, because it's so expensive because of the regulation, yeah. is to cheat. You cheat until you get caught, and then you stop cheating, and you got to work within the system. Until you have enough money where they notice you.
See,
you know?
That's the problem. People are trying to run away from.
The corruption in the you know in Russia and whatnot. 100%. You're 100%
Mexico.
Right. Mexico. Yeah. you're right.
And we are becoming those same kinds of people.
With the more regulation, you get more that way. For sure. Yeah.
Because everybody finds a way around the regulation.
Or they're motivated to anyway.
Yeah.
You know, because if you can't start a business without going through all these hoops and you can't go through the hoops, what do? You have to cheat. And I don't blame people for doing that. I mean, I'm hypothetically a rule follower, but in reality, you have to do what's right. And that sometimes means breaking a couple of rules, you know.
Well, now let's talk about rules. And let's use Google and Facebook and YouTube as an example. Now the rules are so everywhere and also so nebulous. I mean, I know Steven Crowder, he's with his attorneys in YouTube all the time saying, explain the rule.
Mm-hmm.
And the rules keep changing and they're never really fully explained.
No.
So how does somebody like you survive online?
Well, I got a manager, and so I can put in ads now. Originally, it was pretty good. I would get ticked for, demonetization on this video or that video or whatever. Now that doesn't matter so much, now that I have ads on my show. So that kind of saved me. Because as soon as I did my AOC video that blew up, that you, by the way, I got to give you so much credit, because you were really the only one that took that seriously. There were a couple other people, but for the most part, everybody just dismissed this as politics as usual. And I said, if this is politics as usual, then it's a way bigger story than just AOC. And I don't think so.
I saw that story, and first of all, I recognized the effort. I mean, it was very reminiscent of what I have done in the past. And so I recognize when somebody has put in a lot of work, and I know the one thing that I always thought would happen was that honest people would look at it and they could look past the showmanship of it and they would say, gosh, that looks like a pretty good case. Is that true?
Yeah.
And just do some simple checking.
Exactly.
With some simple checking, what you came up with and what you demonstrated was absolutely true.
Yeah.
What happened after that?
Well, so pretty much after that, pretty much every video after that was demonetized. It was simply, anytime I would post a video, demonetized. Not only that, but YouTube had announced, prior to that, they had announced that if anything comes anywhere close to anything like a quote-unquote conspiracy theory, they were going to restrict the distribution, right? That was their I don't know, right or their policy or something like that. But they didn't really explain what borderline, they call it borderline. That's what they call it, borderline.
Me talking about the caliphate in 2010 was called a conspiracy theory. It happened.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Well, pretty much anytime
anything.
You mention George S. On the YouTubes, it's considered. So I looked into him because, you know, there were some ties there to Zach Exley, and there were some ties from Zach Exley, which you were on to Zach Exley in like a million years ago.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you were on to that guy even like at the very beginning, like way before any of us knew who the heck he was, before I think even you knew who he was.
Uh-huh.
And but anyway, so I figured out there was a connection between AOC and George S. And I was like, wow, that's kind of fascinating. Let me dive into the stuff about him, because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, this is all conspiracy theories. A lot of people are like, no, seriously, he's got his fingers in everything. So I thought, okay, let me really dive in. It was astonishing to me,
mm-hmm.
how, not only how right you were when you did that huge, you know, it was a huge thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a huge thing. But also just since then, how much stuff that he's done. I mean, the guy, he really wants, I mean, it's like megalomania.
Yeah.
And it's so much of it is true. I can't even remember seeing an article that I thought, you know, that wasn't backed up by evidence, mm-hmm. that it wasn't clearly true
mm-hmm.
that this was happening. And now they're saying, okay, yeah, with the district attorneys and stuff like that, you know, district attorneys around the country is trying to do that now.
Attorney generals,
right.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It's like, why do you want, and that's what I was talking about, struggling with the motivation and attention. Why would a billionaire care so much? Why do they want to control the United States, especially when, he's getting up there? Yeah, maybe.
He's quoted in his own book and on video mm-hmm. saying it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
it's
he is.
Fun.
You're right.
And yeah, some people get hurt with these little experiments we do, but that's what happens.
And he says he's got a messiah complex.
Yeah.
You know, he'll just say this stuff.
I know. It's a really, it's an amazing thing that you wonder, other than not wanting to be on the wrong side of him,
mm-hmm. yeah,
which is a scary place to be.
Absolutely right.
You wonder, is there no one? Is there really no one that thinks this? I mean, the left used to be against star chambers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's as close to you get to, as you can get to, a, like, you know, the classic movie Star Chamber.
I was going to say, people should watch that movie. They haven't seen Star Chamber.
I mean, he is really as close as you can get to that without going into fiction. And nobody seems to care.
No. Yeah, it is a weird thing. And it's not just him, though. I mean, there's other leftist billionaires. It's bizarre. It's like, my theory has been that if a person has an opportunity to change the world, he will convince himself that doing so is good. Because it will put you in the history books. And for whatever reason, especially if you're rich, especially if you're very, very rich, like billionaire level rich, you want to be in the history books. Because what else are you going to do? You've accomplished all these other goals,
mm-hmm.
you know, in your life. You don't really have anywhere else to go. Oh, I should put my name in history if I do this little thing and tweak the world in such a way that it makes a historic change. Yeah, but that historic change might be the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
That historic change might be something utterly devastating to people.
Mm-hmm.
But in your mind, you're like, but I really want to get in the history books. So I'm going to figure out a way why sending tons and tons of migrants into Europe is actually a good thing. Devastating to people. But he can make a difference, mm-hmm. quote unquote, you know, so he's going to go ahead and do
it. Back in 2010, I talked about how the caliphate would be formed. Middle East would be set on fire. Caliphate would be formed.
Mm-hmm.
And that would spread up into Europe through, you know, immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
That would destabilize, and then it would come over here.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same people saying that this was good then. We got Europe, you have to take that. This is good. You have to take them.
Yeah.
That are saying now we have to take everybody who comes across our border. And they're now in Europe apologizing to Europe, saying, oh, I'm sorry, that was really bad. That destabilized things. But they don't recognize it over here. They're not honest brokers.
No. I'm currently reading The Strange Death of Europe. Great book.
Mm.
And it is... there is something to be said for the preservation of culture, you know, and nobody likes to talk about that as when it pertains to European cultures, because it's white people, you know, it's the people who were the colonists at one point. So there's either the argument that we've got to pay for our sins, or there's the argument that, you know, we're the bad guys and everybody else is the good guy, or there's the argument that we have all the wealth and so we need to be generous to help other people. And that argument I actually, to some degree, agree with. But have you seen the bubblegum, or the bubblegum, I think it's bubblegum gumball, the gumball video on YouTube? Mm-mm. I'll send this to you. It's an amazing video. There's this guy, he just has a bunch of gumballs, and he says, this is how many poor people there are in the world, like truly poor. And it's an unbelievable, like just tons of gumballs. He's like, this is how many immigrants we take in every year. It takes one gumball, puts in this little glass. He says, this is how many illegals come in. He takes another gumball, he puts in the glass. He's like, this is not helping anything. It's like every year, this is how many more poor people are born. And he pours like a whole thing of gumballs in. It's like, you think we're helping the world out by you want to feel good about yourself by taking one gumball of immigrants into your country? It's like, no, you got to help people out where they are. We got to figure out systematic approaches to helping people throughout the world. The immigration thing is just going to hurt us, and it's not going to help anybody.
I think, but I think that's what the free market does. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to help people out, is to teach them how to fish. I mean, even if you've seen the Bono speech that he gave at the London School of Economics, here's a guy who's been given charity forever, who finally comes out and goes, you know what? None of this is work.
Yeah.
I've been doing it forever. None of this works. The best thing we can do is strengthen capitalism, the free market. Give them access to the free market and help them help themselves.
You know, I saw that same video, and he just seemed so sad. He seemed so defeated.
Wouldn't you? Your life's work, and you realize it was a waste?
Absolutely. In one way, it is a little depressing to see somebody who feels that way, that, like, you know, they've struggled so long and it hasn't worked. Because you want to believe, and that's the sort of leftist idealism that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, there is this idea that I can make a difference. And, you know, you can potentially start a business, or, you know, there's many, many ways to actually help within a system that is effective. But these, like, kind of little, idealistic ways to try to fix the world, if they're not effective, you do have to abandon them. And it is sad, especially for an artist, especially for somebody who's a dreamer, who really wants to do those things. But really, I mean, if you truly want to help people, you really have to focus on the things that work. And the market works. I mean, like you said, teaching people to fish works.
Right, because of the individual.
Yeah.
You know, we're losing sight of the individual.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've all worked at places where somebody has an idea, or you might have had an idea, and then there's somebody always at the table who's like, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. And you're just like, oh, shut up. It would work if we could all get on the same page. Where the leftist goes wrong is eventually they remove that person from the table, mm-hmm. and anyone else that might be thinking that way.
Yep.
And if they have to forcibly remove them, they will forcibly remove them, because we are going to do this because it will work. And the more it doesn't work, the more they can't be proven wrong. It's got to be somebody else that doesn't believe in it
that's
screwing it all up.
Yeah. You're 100% right. I mean, this is why they're trying to silence all the voices on YouTube, on Twitter, any conservative voice.
How concerned about that are you?
I'm not as concerned as some people, because, and the main reason is because I think there's enough of us now who are aware of what's happening, that I don't think that they can get away with it. And I think they kind of know that.
You're laughing at me. Yeah, I remember when I was young and naive.
Oh, maybe I'm a little optimistic.
Yeah.
Okay. What were you thinking?
Let me just go to Justice Democrats.
Well, those guys are definitely, like, you know,
they have upped the game.
You're right.
Every step of the way, they do it under the cover of darkness, mm-hmm. And they get worse and worse and worse. And it's a conspiracy theory, and everybody is told, oh, don't worry about it, it's not that big of a deal. only in when somebody is there to replace the Justice Democrats that are worse than the Justice Democrats will we hear and really accept what the Justice Democrats were doing.
Well, you're 100% right. And their plan is actually a relatively effective plan if they can pull it off.
So why don't you explain who they are and what their plan is? Because they just pulled off something. They just got a district attorney elected that's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Let's hire the chief law enforcer to not enforce the law.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the same thing's going on. I mean, with what happened in Portland, I was looking into the chief of police up there, and they're like, we want to do community policing, which is essentially like, what, not arresting Antifa? Like, not doing your job? Okay, let me get into Brand New Congress and Justice Democrats. So, originally, it was called Brand New Congress. This is the brainchild of a guy named Zach Exley. Zach Exley is a Soros minion. This comes from a long line of people who had similar ideas. But the idea was to completely replace Congress with socialists, really. They call themselves progressives. They're far-left Democrats who want redistribution and all this kind of nonsense.
I think we have, because I'm pretty well read on the progressive movement, and I believe that we are now out of the progressive movement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We are now in the socialist.
Straight up socialism.
Right. Progressives are people like Joe Biden, and he looks like he's a dinosaur.
Yep.
That era is over. The progressives brought us to the doorstep of socialism, and now the socialists are like, good, sit down. We'll take it from here.
Well, we should actually dive into the word socialism, because to use one of your words, the great word, nebulous, socialism is now a nebulous term, which it never was historically. I mean, socialism was essentially synonymous with communism. It's a Marxist idea, right, of the redistribution of wealth in the communist mold. Well,
socialism is, I mean, I know the technical definition, well, it used to be the step between capitalism and communism. Communism, people think, oh, that's when the state gets really ugly and puts everybody in a gulag. No, not according to Marx.
No. According to Marx, it's the ideal. It's the utopia.
It's the utopia. And then they say, oh, well, that wasn't really communism. They're actually right, according to Marx.
It's not
that it will never happen.
Hypothetical communism. It's the result of what happened. Look, this is why communism doesn't work. You tell everybody that they just got to work as hard as they can, and we're going to pay you all the same. And a lot of people say, you know, if I don't have to work harder than this guy, like, why am I working so hard? And then you go, okay, well, people are being less productive than we need them to, because everything's run by the state. And so then you have to have a class of enforcers, right? And instantly you have two classes. Mm-hmm. You have the oppressed class and you have the oppressor class, right? And this creates an instantaneous authoritarian dictatorship, because you have to control the masses. You have to control them with violence. It's the only way, or force. Mm-hmm. It's the only way to do it. And so always communism will turn into that. It will always turn into that. But they don't.
It's against human nature.
It's completely.
Against human nature. And we've tried it. We've tried it for religious reasons. The Mormons tried something like that. They called it the United Order, I think. The Pilgrims tried it.
The Pilgrims. I didn't know about the Mormons.
Yeah, it was
interesting history.
Yeah, United Order. They had, they were really struggling. They said, put everything together, 100% tithe. And you just work, and it fell apart that fast.
It is such a beautiful dream.
It's beautiful.
I love the dream. I love the idea that people will motivate themselves to help out their fellow man.
Right.
But people are so lazy and selfish.
That's exactly what happened. They were like, well, you know, brother so-and-so's not doing it, so, I mean, I'm not going to work all day and have him sit around and do it. It's not right. And the Mormons came to the conclusion, this is a great idea. And when Jesus comes, maybe he can convince everybody to be on board.
Maybe that's right.
I think it is the way Christ would rule, but nobody's Christ. Everyone else needs a gun.
Right. Exactly right. Yeah. And if you have a strong motivator, and maybe that motivator could be God himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a strong motivator, then you'll get productive, you know, productivity out of people.
But the motivator is in America is you can better yourself.
Absolutely.
You can better your station. You can better. And one of the problems is we've been convinced that you can't better the nation.
Right.
Your station. Yeah. You can't better yourself. Yeah. My kids will not be better off than
hopefully
I am.
We can better the nation.
Yeah.
I don't know, because it's such a benevolent system in terms of the distribution, because what we're really doing is redistributing opportunity. That's what capitalism is. Communism is redistributing the fruits of everyone's labor. But capitalism is redistributing opportunity, because you really want the best of the best. So it's in everybody's best interest to educate everybody well, to have everybody at the top of the game, so the best of the best is better than the best of the best last year. You know, and you can choose from, you know, everybody who is amazing in America helps everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in our best interest to make everybody amazing. I'll try to get back to the...
I have a tendency to go off on these. Yeah, me too. So go ahead.
Well, so the brand new Congress, the idea that they originally had was completely mental. It was, let's replace all the, what they would call establishment Democrats, the Joe Bidens.
Mm-hmm.
Let's replace all of them with these far left progressives, or essentially socialists. AOCs. They were saying, let's do a bunch of Elizabeth Warrens. We want everybody in Congress to be Elizabeth Warren. That was their idea. But it wasn't just the establishment Democrats. They were also going to, this is completely nuts. They were going to go after red states, red districts, Congress, because people don't know who their congressman is. Mm-hmm. People don't know who they're voting for Congress. A lot of people just hit the R.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're a Republican, they just hit the R. So they were, their idea was, let's go into these areas in which there's very, very little voter turnout, because everybody just expects the Republican's going to be elected.
Mm-hmm.
And let's bring a progressive in there to campaign as a Republican in their primary. And let's go to all the progressives in the area kind of quietly and tell them all, oh, vote for this guy, because even though he's a Republican, he's really with us. He's really a progressive. And they'd get them on the ballot as a Republican, right? They'd win their primary because nobody votes in that region anyway. And then everybody who, you know, who needed a vote in the general would just tick the box for Republican. Right. They wouldn't even think about it, because that would be the Republican nominee. Right. This progressive, this socialist. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're going to sneak socialists in into Congress as Republicans. That's so I mean, it's completely mental.
And do we know that they're not doing that?
No, I think that they still plan to do this. I think the only guard we have against this kind of tomfoolery is telling people about it. I think if people know what's going on, they'll know what to look for, and especially reporters and people who look into this stuff, hopefully this, people will get the word out.
This kind of goes to almost the what was the saying from Hitler, that the more outrageous the lie, the more likely people are to believe it. Mm. Where this is, the more outrageous the act,
yeah,
you know, you can pull off the outrageous, yeah, because people will go, oh, come on, that's ridiculous.
This is why people think Soros is a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of these big lie, right? These big lies work because people just dismiss them as
it's crazy
fiction. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got to be making this up.
You're not going to get rid of the free market system in America. Well, if everybody thinks that and they don't do anything to protect it, mm-hmm, we will.
Yeah,
we will. Okay, so Justice Democrats, mm-hmm, they changed their name. Why did they change their name? Do you know?
Yeah, because they started work with Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks. It was a real piece of work, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's actually not quite as crazy as a lot of people, but he's very bombastic, mm-hmm, you know, and he's got a loud voice, and he's got a big channel on YouTube, the Young Turks.
He's got a very large pocketbook for,
mm-hmm,
lefties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he got in with Zach Exley and Saikat Chakrabarty and that whole team that were doing the brand new Congress thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he, Cenk, pitched it to the Young Turks audience as Justice Democrat. So he had a similar idea, or he took that idea, and or something happened where they had a parallel idea, and the brand new Congress guys said, okay, well, he's got this huge audience, so we're just going to call it whatever the heck he wants to call it. He wants to call it Justice Democrats? Fine, we'll call it Justice Democrats. So they changed the name, I think, for Cenk, you know. And that's why originally, in my original video, I said Cenk was the mastermind, because he sort of pitched it that way, like, mm-hmm, it was his idea. Mm-hmm. It is only until I researched further I realized, no, he's just he was sort of being used
front
as
man.
A mouthpiece. Yeah, front man, the propaganda wing of, mm-hmm, the brand new, mm-hmm, Congress, Justice Democrats Party. Which they really should be their own political party, because they're really their own crazy thing with the Green, mm-hmm, New Deal and, mm-hmm, paying people who don't want to work and
crazy.
It's legit mental.
But the third party doesn't work, especially
right
in a Democratic Party, because of the superdelegates and everything else.
Right.
You're gonna You'll die on the vine.
I don't know why they do that over there, by the way. The super delicate thing.
Because of Mr. Reagan. Do you not know that? That story?
No, I don't know why they did
so super delegates.
I just know it's a problem for them every single election.
Yeah, well, they saw Reagan take over the Republican Party and become so radical. And here's this guy who was so radical, took over the Democratic or Republican Party and changed the course of the Republican Party. And they did not want that to happen. So back in the 80s, they said,
how
do we safeguard a radical from coming in and changing us? So they did the superdelegates.
Right.
So that kept people like Bernie Sanders out, et cetera, et cetera.
The people don't get as much of a voice as the DNC.
Correct.
Oh, gosh, these guys. I mean, it's just a PR nightmare for them. They really need to fix that.
Yeah.
Because people want to believe that they have a voice, even if... I think on the left, it's tough for to be a leftist, I think, today. Because they don't distinguish... This is something that I keep talking about on my channel. On the right, you know... White supremacists and KKK, they're all accused of being right-wing. I don't consider them right-wing.
They're not.
I consider them their own delusional thing.
They're all national socialists.
Exactly.
That's not right.
Identity,
identitarians.
People. Yeah, and so, but on the left, they don't distinguish themselves. On the right, we say, that's not us, okay? Mm-hmm. We distance ourselves. We're like, those guys are toxic. We don't have anything to do with them. Mm-hmm. On the left, they don't do that. They don't say, oh, no, Antifa doesn't speak for me. They say, they justify what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They'll say, well, I don't believe in violence, but, you know, it actually kind of makes sense because they're not so bad. They think the same thing I do. It's like, what are you doing? You have to distinguish yourself from your crazies.
The same thing that those in Germany, when they made excuses for the brown shirts.
Yeah.
You know, yes, but they just want order, and yes, they get out of hand from time to time, and... They think they can control it, and they will never control it. You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah.
Okay, so go back to the Justice Democrats get their new name, and what do they do?
Okay, so they do this casting call. They decide that, okay, we're going to try to put... Cenk convinced them not to do the Republican thing, right? Not to go into these smaller districts and... He's like, let's just focus on the establishment Dems. We want to get those guys out because he really hates the establishment Dems, which is something I kind of understand because he thinks that they're kind of bought and paid for by Wall Street and corporations and this kind of stuff.
They all are.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, I shouldn't say they all are.
On both sides. Yeah, on both sides. And I'll agree with Cenk on that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, he's, you know, that's why I say he's like not the worst of them, right? You know, he's got a legit beef, you know. So, okay, so he wants to get the establishment out. He wants to get these progressives in, which I don't think is any better, but he thinks they're better. So he convinces them just to go after the Democrats, and that's exactly what they do. And they get they don't get as many as they wanted, but they get a ton of nominees for Congress. It was 2016, right? And AOC was one of their people. And they got a few in. I don't remember all their names right off the top of my head because it's been a while since I did that stuff, but they got a few of the people in, and they sponsored. They like said, okay, we're kind of aligned with some people who are already in Congress, stuff like that. But AOC was really their home run. I mean, that was the new evidence has surfaced to suggest that AOC wasn't actually nominated in the same way everybody else was, because one guy that's been investigating this stuff for a long time suspects that she knew Zach Exley from before the nominating process happened. So she did go through the process the same as everybody else, but it was like a show to make it look like everything was fair, when in reality they'd kind of handpicked her beforehand and said, you're golden. But the idea was that they would bring in people in a nominating process, and then they would go over their resume and hire them in the same way that you would hire an actress, right? And the idea was that they write the script, and these congressmen read the script, right? And they talk about this in their video. They say, well, you didn't have any interest in running for office before us, right? And she's like, no. And they say, you know, this is a group-first movement, right? So this has instructed all of your, everything that you've said and done since you've been elected. It's been group-first, right? You've been following the, and she's like, absolutely. And they're just admitting to it in the video. I mean, it's
on stunning. Video. When you see the video, it's stunning.
It's amazing how transparent some of these people are I don't think they're doing anything wrong.
I remember when we exposed the Tides Foundation, and one of the guys who was behind the Tides Foundation for the Obamacare, he said, some people say this is a Trojan horse. I know this from memory because I played that video so many times on television. Some people say this is a Trojan horse. It's not a Trojan horse. It's right there. I'm showing it to you. We will have single-payer health care.
And that's a big defense of the Justice Democrats and brand-new Congress and the Young Turks. They'll say, I don't know why you think this is some kind of evil conspiracy. This is on the table. We're showing it to you. We're broadcasting it. We want everybody to know what we're doing.
But once you say it, what happened to you?
I know.
Anything close to a conspiracy. How could it be a conspiracy? Here it is. They're saying it.
I know. And Snopes got on me and BuzzFeed got on me. Fact checkers, quote unquote fact checkers. And they're like, oh, you know, there's several reasons why this is false. One reason that it's false is that, everybody's doing it. It's like, no, not everybody is doing this. Another reason it's not true is because it's not a secret. They've talked about this. It's like, okay, you can murder somebody in secret or you can murder somebody in public. You still murdered somebody. Mm-hmm. It's still bad. And I don't remember what the last point I was going to make is, but yeah, they're trying to fact check. They also like to fact check the idea that I said she was an actress, right? As if she has like a SAG membership.
Yeah.
Right. And I these guys wrote me and I wrote them back and I said, look, you know, that was a metaphor. You know, that I was saying that as a way to explain what she was doing. You know, she was a
casting call. It wasn't a casting call, but
that's a good way to illustrate it.
You were in Hollywood. You were clear in that video. Yeah. You were using a metaphor.
That's an analogy. Clear. Yeah. And like, why would you fact check that? I heard that Snopes actually fact checked a couple of the Babylon Bee articles?
Oh, that's like so funny. I love the Babylon Bee.
Yeah, they're like, were you fact-checking parodies and satire? And it's like, what are you doing? These guys have no credibility. They're like a propaganda thing for leftists.
But so why are they so effective? Because they did it with AOC, and they just talk a little bit about, I'm assuming you know, the new district attorney from the same district from AOC.
I actually haven't read her.
This is crazy.
But I saw it in the news, but I didn't actually do my research.
So, same exact story. She's going to be the district attorney. One of the tweets. One of the tweets that I saw her make right after the election was, the reason why we won is because of our very dedicated door knockers and workers.
Yeah.
They were sex workers, ex-cons,
really?
And illegal immigrants. In her tweet, illegal immigrants, ex-cons, and sex workers. This is the district attorney.
Yeah, that's who we want.
Right.
Prosecuting the criminals of New York City. Oh, my goodness.
And this was all done and organized by The same Justice Democrats.
Yeah, they have such a bizarre
agenda. By the way,
that
was a five-term sitting district attorney.
Oh, no.
A Democrat. Yeah. A Democrat. Yeah. They're not coming. There's no one in the press that is talking about the civil war in the Democratic Party.
Oh, yeah.
It makes the Tea Party look like nonsense. Because when we did the Tea Party, we thought we were making progress.
Uh-huh.
We weren't making any progress. Those guys are going to do whatever the hell they want. We made no real progress lasting, in my opinion. And that's why Donald Trump is there, because everybody was pissed. Okay, really? You want to play that game?
Yeah.
Okay, meet our junkyard dog.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah,
right.
That's exactly right.
These guys are actually making an impact. I was talking to Joe Lieberman, and he said, where are the Democrats who don't believe that we should abandon the free market? He said, Glenn, they're all afraid to say anything.
Yeah.
They're terrified of those guys.
There is a war, and the rational left, if you can even call them that, they're losing the war. They're losing the war because the radical left, the socialists, their voice is so loud. And what they're saying is interesting to people because it's stuff that people haven't heard, really.
Mm-hmm.
So at least they haven't heard it in a way that sounds good. I mean, it was always, you know, portrayed, I think, accurately as, you know, a devastating, you know, system to implement government wise. But these guys are presenting it as if, no, it's going to be good because it's going to help save Miami from going underwater. And you know, all these ridiculous.
So what is it, do you think, they actually believe?
You know, it's a good, that's an excellent question. I think that it has, okay, I'll tell you what I think. I think that there is a fundamental delusion within the left, and I don't even think it's just the progressive radical left. I think it's like, even if, like a hair left, even the moderate left oftentimes accepts this, which is that there are good guys and there are bad guys, and they want to be one of the good guys. They want to be a white knight. They want to stand, you know, tall and say, I'm a good guy. And the good guys are, well, okay, let's go with the bad guys first. The bad guys are men. The bad guys are the white colonialists of Europe, you know, the colonized America and the other places. Christians, traditional Christianity is the enemy, right? Because Christians, you know, persecuted gays or something, right? So, and the good guys are LGBT, ethnic minorities, immigrants, Muslims. These are the good guys. So in their mind, it's not like they it's almost like they can't fathom that some Muslims might be bad, some black people might be bad, some white people might be good, some men might be good. They just have this line that they draw, and they say, these are the good guys, and these are the bad guys. Let us design a society that punishes the bad guys and that elevates the good guys. And their whole system functions on that delusion. And so that's why I always say the left will always be wrong. They will always fail in attempting to design a society that works because they've got these fundamental delusions about who's good and who's bad. And you got to look at people as individuals. Some people are good and some people are bad in every group.
You say they always fail, but they don't always fail. Sometimes it takes 70 years. Sometimes it takes 10 years.
No, they don't always fail immediately.
They don't always fail.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced these guys are going to fail.
No. Well, they are a danger. And you make a really good point. That's something I didn't think of, is working off the template of Justice Democrats and Brand New Congress, another group could form that could be even more effective. And that is actually kind of terrifying. If you had another outside group come in, because it's a powerful idea to be part of a group and a winning group. And the really annoying thing is that the people who voted for AOC didn't know that she was just parroting, you know, some writer's script.
And when you say that, I saw your video and what was shocking and it explained her, it totally explained her. How she was saying exactly what Justice Democrats were saying 4 years before. She obviously got the script, which to me totally explains when, how do you feel about Israel?
Yeah.
Well, Israel is a bad place. They're the oppressor. Well, can you tell me more about that? Well,
she wasn't qualified. She wasn't qualified.
Right. And it shows that she's learning things. She's repeating and regurgitating something that she doesn't believe, that she's been told or taught or whatever. And there's no depth there.
Yeah. No, there's no. She doesn't fully. She is so emblematic of so many leftists that I've met throughout my life, either back home in Oregon where I grew up or in Los Angeles where I live now, who don't really know anything about politics, but they heard a couple of talking points on MSNBC or CNN. You know, they heard Don Lemon talking or Rachel Maddow. They heard some kind of talking point, and they were like, yeah, the Israelis are so mean to those Palestinians.
Right, right.
Like, you know,
right.
So I'm for the Palestinians because they're the underdog, you know.
Right.
That they work on an emotional level. They'll say, these are the underdogs, these are the oppressed, and these are their oppressors. These are the bad guys. And if you want to be good, you'll join us in defending these poor oppressed people. And the conservative will go, but didn't they just send a bunch of missiles against their so-called oppressors? And they'll be like, yeah, but I mean, come on. Those are just like little missiles.
Yeah, right, right.
And the, you know,
and
the
what
Israelis
would you
have
do?
Such a good defense system that it doesn't even really matter.
That's right.
It's
That's
like,
right.
What are you talking about? They're literally trying to murder these people.
And they're stating it.
Yeah, then they're stating it openly. Yeah. And they'll, if they find somebody on their own, sort of like, you know, a lost lamb, rape and murder and awful stuff happens. And it's just, it's a pretty nasty situation over there. And it's a nuanced situation, granted. There is there are, like I said, there's good and bad people on both sides in every group. But
what do you make of the relationship? Have you looked into the relationship of Ilhan Omar and CARE and the Muslim infiltration of this radical revolutionary wing of the Democratic Party yet?
No, I haven't gone into the Muslim thing. A lot of people really wanted me to, because it's very important to a lot of people. But that's a tricky one. I mean, that one takes a lot of research. Again, you really have to, really get into it. I have some Muslim friends, really good people, really solid people that are, family people that are trying to make their way and do the right thing. And the left, I think, does have a valid concern that people will become hateful of anyone who is,
so wait,
is Muslim.
True, yeah. If we don't educate people on the difference between somebody who follows Islam, yeah, and somebody who is an Islamist.
Right.
If you're an Islamist, you believe that the caliphate must be executed, that there is no law outside of the, yeah, Quran. And those are dangerous people. And they are oppressing. I mean, the first ones they're going to kill are the people who follow Islam but are not Islamists.
Right.
So they're on the front line.
Right.
And I think people that are good Muslims, they understand that. And we're betraying them.
Yeah.
CARE is a front for Hezbollah.
Yeah.
And, you know, how does a woman, if you are with CARE and Hezbollah, how do you get away with being for women's rights and all of these things, gay rights? How are you for those things? And unless your Hamas front group,
yeah, yeah,
is suddenly just a really good, non-Quran following group,
yeah,
that doesn't want death to Israel, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Well, have you heard?
I think
there's this idea in Islam. I forget what it's called. I think it's takir or something,
yes,
like that. You know, takir.
Mm-hmm.
It's this idea that you, and it's interpreted in different ways by different, mm-hmm, Muslims. But one interpretation is, yeah, you just pretend, mm-hmm, that you believe the things that your host country believes, or your
host
country
believes. If you are standing with the Quran, mm-hmm, and standing with what the Quran actually says, according to them, mm-hmm, that you can lie,
yep,
to further these goals, yep, and you're perfectly cool.
And that is such an awful thing to have in your culture, because how can anyone trust anyone from your culture?
Well,
if that's part of it.
That's the same with us, though.
I suppose that's true. I suppose anybody can lie.
Yeah.
Anybody can lie.
I mean, that's not in our scriptures,
that's the problem.
It's in our culture.
You're right. That's true. But like I said, there are good and bad people in every group.
Mm-hmm.
But written into their actual laws is this. And again, not everybody interprets it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But
no, there's a. Read my book. It is about Islam.
Right.
There is clearly an Islam, yeah, that is a reformist movement that a lot of people, but all the people in that group, mm-hmm, are afraid of the Islamists.
100%, yeah.
And the Islamists are the danger.
At the end of the day, I think that the good Muslims need to stand up against the Islamists.
Why would they?
I'll tell you why. Because it's going to always be hard for them everywhere they go if everybody's afraid that they might be a terrorist.
Right. So they know that. Mm-hmm. But I have good friends who are Muslim. Zudi Jasser, who, sure, is an amazing guy, he stands firmly against it. His life is hell.
I know.
Because the bad guys will shut you down.
Yeah. But I think that in a large enough group, if it was a movement that happened en masse, right, that it would not be possible to.
But who's going to, again, I'm just trying to put myself in the mindset.
I mean, I'm totally sympathetic as well. I mean,
yeah,
I am.
Of an American Muslim who they've gone to Congress and they've begged, they've cried, please listen to us. These people are coming over. They're in our communities, and you're turning a blind eye. And the media, they come out, they're hate.
Well, you're getting to really the crux of the issue, I think, which is that any time the left pretends that something doesn't exist, like to me, if something's real, if there's a real problem that legitimately exists in the world, to pretend that that problem doesn't exist does not make you a good person. But the left thinks that it does. The left thinks that every racial problem that exists doesn't exist because I'm not a racist. It's like, no, that doesn't make you not a racist to pretend that there is not problems in the black community. Does not make you not an Islamophobe because you're pretending that there is no such thing as Sharia law or, you know, radical Islam or any of this stuff. They just pretend that it doesn't exist so that they can pretend that there are good people and they love everybody and blah, 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 blah. It's like, look, guys, not tackling a problem doesn't make you a good person. It just makes you a coward, really. But that's what the left wants to do. They want to pretend that they're a good person. They think that pretending these problems don't exist makes them good. The fact that you think that there's problems in the black community, that makes you an evil person.
Correct.
It's like so stupid. You're never going to solve a problem that way.
Never. Never. We would never.
And that's really what I fight against on my channel. It's like just the instant, like without hesitation, you're a racist, you're a homophobe, you're an Islamophobe, because you're willing to accept that one of these groups may have an issue.
So it's, you know, I thought Showtime is running this series on Roger Ailes and Fox.
There's actually two. There's the Showtime one, and then there's a feature film coming out, which I am in.
Are you really?
I have a line. It's a very short line, but I have a line.
What do you play?
I'm in O'Reilly's booth. I'm in O'Reilly's booth, and I what is my line? It's Drudge took down the report or something. I yell, Drudge took down the report, and everybody runs their computers. It's great fun, man. I was with Margot Robbie. We had a great time. She's awesome.
So they're doing this this series, and I haven't watched it yet, but I will. And as I was watching the trailer, I thought, this is true. You know, the things that I've seen in a trailer and the sexual things that were going on, I absolutely believe. Didn't see it myself, but I absolutely believe
it.
The culture there was very, very toxic. With that being said, Hollywood is a much bigger expert on Harvey Weinstein. And so why isn't there a movie. Or a series or a documentary on Weinstein?
Yeah.
They don't want to open that door, I think, because they're still afraid.
Yeah.
Nobody in their community wants to hear it because so many people were involved in it. And so they never will take on their own community first. Take the beam out of your own eye first.
I love that scripture.
Yeah.
I love that scripture.
It's the
best. You know, I'll tell you what, I do think that there are enough conservatives in Hollywood that are secret conservatives that we're getting to a tipping point where I do think that they're going to come out of the closet. You know,
well, and then they kind of went back in the closet.
You're talking specifically about the Harvey Weinstein situation.
I mean, Friends of Abe.
Well, right. Well, no. There's still groups. Trust me.
Are there?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I'm there on the front lines. They have to meet in secret. We actually had somebody, I won't say who, come to speak at one of our events the other day, and there was like government helicopters, you know, making sure that everything was copacetic. Anyway, it's an interesting thing to be out there in Hollywood. But I do think that there is going to be. Do you remember Miramax in the 90s started to do independent films, but it was obviously distributed by Miramax, and a lot of them had big budgets. That was sort of like, oh, look, we're doing our own kind of interesting thing over here because there's a market for this. In the 90s, they like this ultra-violent sex stuff. I think that there may be a pocket for that in Hollywood now for conservatism. I think that somebody, a smart producer, will figure out, okay, there is a market to be, you know, there's money to be made here, like a lot of money. If they were to make feature films that were marketed to conservatives, that had conservative values, that hired writers like, you know, conservative writers, I think that there's money to be made there.
So the only one that I can think that could do this is Jason Blum. But Jason needs to, I mean, with his theory was with horror films was...
Is that Blumhouse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his theory with horror films, which is where he started, was he was watching the studio system, and people who are not fans of horror movies were making them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they weren't made for fans of horror movies. And so he said, you know what, I'm going to take the horror movie business out here, and I'm going to make sure that the only people who are making it are the fans of horror movies.
Yeah.
And look at how well his
movies...
Now
he's one of the biggest studios.
Correct.
Yeah.
And he's doing that with... I mean, in fact, the Fox movie is made by Blumhouse as well.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's doing is... And if he does this... If he does this right without necessarily going to the people who are making church films...
Sure. Yeah,
you know,
yeah, I know.
It will work.
Uh-huh.
Hollywood does these God films or conservative films, and they're just ridiculous.
They're made by leftists.
Correct. They don't know how, you know, I could never blend in at a Barbara Streisand cocktail party, you know, and go and just pull that off. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to do. If they find the good directors that know how to make a good movie, not a message movie, a good movie that just doesn't assault me all the time. A lot
did
of
you
money.
See, did you see Captain Marvel?
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched that specifically to see what the... Oh, man. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. In-your-face messaging from beginning to end.
I walked out of that thinking... My Marvel magic, you know, my honeymoon period with Marvel is over.
And it was hard to watch, really, because it...
And you know what the crazy thing is? On Marvel movies, what was the one where they had the ships up and they were monitoring everybody and they were going to, you know, start just to, you know, laser all of the people that disagreed? Remember, it was... It was one of what all of the... Does anybody know on the crew?
Winter Soldier.
What was it?
Winter Soldier?
Winter Soldier, yeah, okay. That was a conservative movie with conservative principles. But I don't think any liberal knows. I watch movies all the time and I'm like, did they drop the gear in their brain when they were reading this? Yes!
Right.
But they never seem to get it.
Well, occasionally they'll throw us a couple of crumbs. You know, there was this moment in, which I think was the first Avengers movie, where Captain America is going to jump off of this flying airplane, helicopter thing, and he's going to go fight Thor, and somebody said... somebody goes, hey, watch it. You know, you don't want to get involved with this. Like, these guys are practically gods. And he goes, there's only one god, ma'am, and he doesn't dress like that. And he jumps out of the thing. I was like, yeah, it's a great line. It's a great line. And whoever wrote that line either has a little conservative in him or they just got it. You know, they got that, okay, this is going to be a little, this is a little crumb for the conservatives, little religious Americans out there who want to see this. And like, you know, good for them. You know, they're not, they don't care about that stuff anyway, but they know that we like it. Okay. But, you know, to me, getting excited about that stupid line, you know, which is, you know, it's a cool line, but it's just a little line in a movie. That's such a good indication to me, such a strong indication that if you just made a movie that was a good movie, that was tailored to conservatives.
Personally, I think most
so
of,
successful. So
I think
so successful.
Most of the Marvel movies, because they were so Stan Lee, do have that American underpinnings. And I think that's one of the reasons why they are so successful. Not all of them, but a lot of them have those you know, underpinnings. The I lost my train of thought. I don't remember.
Well, the Star Wars movies are like, to me, a disaster, right? It's like the complete opposite of Marvel. You're 100% right in that, you know, and I think one of the things with the Marvel movies, they're not afraid to have a straight white guy be the leader, you know, or the hero or something like that. Every other movie that's ever made today, if you're a straight white guy, you're either a doofus or you're the villain. Those are your two options, really, for straight white guys. The Marvel movies are the only sort of bastion left, you know, in Hollywood for like an old-fashioned action movie or an old-fashioned adventure movie where...
It's amazing to me that we have destroyed all of our heroes.
Yeah.
And yet we're making these heroes up, and they generally reflect the principles of the old America.
Yep.
And they don't see that. They don't get that. They're just doing it for money.
Yep.
They're so misreading. Can I change subjects?
Please.
Let's talk about the news of the day-ish, okay? Let's talk about, first of all, what's your take on Biden and all of the candidates? Let's go through them.
Yeah. Well, I've done specials on all of them. There's a lot. Let's go through them. Easier said than done.
I know. Just take the top few.
My favorite is Tulsi Gabbard. She was my favorite from before. I don't think that she brought up the things that I liked in the debates, but I think that was smart because she's not trying to get my vote. She's trying to get the Democrats' vote. So it was good that she sort of pandered a little bit and said some lefty stuff. Biden, I really didn't expect him to go down quite as hard as he did. With Kamala Harris, I remember watching that kind of confused because I'll be honest, I didn't know about this busing thing that happened before I was born. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't something that's like really in the history books because it was sort of like an add on to the civil rights movement. Right. It was like this extra added extra that nobody really cared about. So I listened
at least on the West Coast, perhaps.
Yeah, at least. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And I was watching that and I thought, OK, so you were part of the second class of students in California specifically to have some kind of forced busing, whatever that means. And you were that girl. OK, what did you just say and who the heck cares? And I remember thinking, like, the way she said that, leftists are going to love it. They're just going to eat that up. Because I'm watching it and I'm thinking, she said practically nothing, but the style was there.
I have to tell you, I think you're at the beginning of the road, and I'm surprised that you didn't frame it differently because you are a writer.
How should I have framed it?
And you're a storyteller. No. In my opinion, the reason why that was effective is because she knows how to tell a story.
Well, that's exactly right. That's kind of what I was getting to.
Okay. Yeah, okay. She started telling this story about this little girl, and the alarm bells go off. Yeah. You know how it's going to end.
She's using the elements.
But she knows how, and that little girl
was me.
Yeah. And so she connected with the American people.
She literally could have said anything, any story about catching butterflies. That little girl was me.
Yeah.
And you knew they were going to be like, I'm voting for her.
Right.
You
know, yeah. So to me, she is the most dangerous for Donald Trump. Because if she can get, she's not trusted on the economy, she's not trusted on healthcare, she's not trusted on anything. Yeah. Race relations because of that line, maybe, but everything else. Yep. But she is dangerous because how does Donald Trump, who does Donald Trump, how does he take her apart on the debate stage?
It's a good question. You can never underestimate Trump.
Because
Trump is a wild card, man.
No, I know.
I imagine.
And I've not seen him play. No, I've seen him play a bad hand over and over again, and yet he walks away from the table with all the chips, and you're like, how did that just happen?
Wait, what just happened?
He's like a magician.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I always discounted Kamala Harris, which maybe I shouldn't have done, because I knew she was articulate. I knew she was savvy. I knew she could
She's
tell a good story.
She's a prosecuting attorney.
The way she speaks is excellent. Mm-hmm. I mean, she presents herself beautifully.
Yeah.
But the way she started her career is so problematic for her. And I don't know how she can recover from that.
In San Francisco?
Yeah, in San Francisco with Willie Brown. I mean, I don't think most people know about that. I mean, I've talked about it on my show, but I don't have a huge reach. And it's like, how do you start your career by being somebody's girlfriend and that not come back and then go run for president? I mean, everybody's going to be like, I don't want you to be my president. I mean, you would think that.
Nah,
I mean, maybe we're
not
maybe
today's
we're in America.
We're so far about
it. Maybe we're so far. But I mean, yeah. I
don't know if you've ever watched the show The Flash.
Yeah, the
TV
CW
show.
Yeah.
So, you know, their theory about, you know, the multiple Earth. This is from Earth 7.
That's a DC Comics thing, yeah.
Yeah. I think we just keep slipping onto different places. Because I'll wake up and I'm like,
different realities,
when did the language change? When did everything change?
Look, I'm all for forgiveness. You know, I'm all for, like, you know, people can change and, you know, people have to go through stuff and whatever. And so I don't like holding people to something that they did 30 years ago.
Correct.
So maybe that's a good thing that we don't care about that anymore. you know, maybe that's okay.
Well, but no, wait. I mean, I'm with you as long as it's consistent. They clearly care about the past.
Mr. Kavanaugh. Sure. I'm not talking about leftists. I'm just talking about, like,
generally speaking.
Yeah. I think it's a good thing to forgive people. And I wouldn't, I personally wouldn't hold it against her. I'm trying to read the tea leaves and try to figure out how America's going to react.
So how is America, we're seeing a slide with Joe Biden.
Sure.
Do you count him out now?
It's a tough thing because, you know, I always said, like, wait for the debates. Because everybody was like, oh, you know, Joe Biden, he's got the top numbers. And I'm like, yeah, because he's got the best name recognition. That's it. He was the only establishment guy with name recognition. Like, all of the other moderates, Tim Ryan, who knows who Tim Ryan is?
Yeah, I spent most of the night on that first night going, who is this?
Well, I did a whole thing on this. I knew who they all were. Hickenlooper. What the hell is John Hickenlooper?
Yeah.
John Jacob Hickenlooper Smith. That's what makes me think of. He's an all right guy. I mean, a lot of these guys are all right. People in Colorado would be mad at me for saying that. But, you know, in terms of personality, they're fine. Hickenlooper's a kind of funny guy because he went to a Deep Throat with his mom in the movie theater. Did you hear about that?
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
A lot
of these guys have such funny stories. Mike Gravo didn't make the
debate. That's not a funny story. That's just a weird story.
I meant funny in the sense of odd. Yeah,
like, yeah.
Just odd folks. And who was the other guy? Delaney. Delaney's a moderate.
How about Marianne Williamson, if you want to talk about weird.
Okay, so yeah, that's not moderate. That's crazy land.
That's
weird. But she's a cult leader. She's like a legit cult leader. That's why she sounds kind of good when she's on stage, right? Like, the way she speaks is a little bit...
Yeah, she's the Course in Miracles lady. She's, you know, an Oprah kind of guru.
She's had a lot of practice speaking in front of audiences. Mm-hmm. So she presents herself well, and she's kind of authoritative, you know. But the stuff she says is so crazy.
It's crazy.
But it makes good television.
I'm going to harness love, and I know love will win.
You know,
you are insane if you think you are going to say something like that to Donald Trump and he's not going to
destroy
you.
Listen, I would love it if she was right.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
I would love her to be the candidate.
Yeah.
Just to see those two on stage would just be...
I'm not even sure Trump would know how to deal with her. He'd just be like, I don't know how to deal with this.
And now it's all you'd
crazy.
That's all you'd have to say. That's all he'd have to say.
I don't know how to deal with this woman.
And I think that says everything we need to say here tonight. Okay, so Elizabeth Warren.
You know what? I felt like people were like, oh, she did well in the first half, she did bad in the second half. I felt like she did well in her opening gambit. And then each subsequent thing that she said, I kind of started to tune out. I think she's easy to tune out, and Sanders is easy to tune out, even though he's shouting at everybody like an old man on the front porch, you know, yelling at the teenagers to get off his lawn.
He just looks crazy now.
You know why he looks crazy? Because everybody else
is crazy.
He is crazy. But somebody said, I don't know why I didn't recognize this before. I had to learn this from somebody on Fox or something. But everybody's adopted his platform.
Mm-hmm.
So many people have adopted his ridiculous, absurd policies that he's boring now.
Mm-hmm.
He's just considered like there's some old guy shouting the same things everybody else, but he just sounds a little weirder doing it. So people are kind of, I think that he's done. I mean, I kind of predicted this beforehand. Elizabeth Warren had her day in 2016. She didn't take it. Bernie Sanders had his day in 2016. He got screwed. I mean, he got screwed by the DNC. I think the excitement over those two is over. Elizabeth Warren probably has a lot more steam than Bernie, but yeah,
I really thought she was over. The Indian thing was just like, I am 15 times more Indian. I swear to you, 15 times more Native American than she is.
Yeah. She's as white as you can possibly get.
I mean, look at me. Do I look like, you know, I have any Indian in me?
Yeah. No, I can't claim. I'm just German. I got a quarter Scottish, but German is, I'm the whitest of the white, but I'm a little dark.
Yeah.
I don't know how I look Italian somehow, but.
So how do you think this is going to play out? How do you think? What do you think we should be looking for? What does it say to you that Biden is coming down, Bernie is coming down, Kamala is surging?
It is fascinating. You do see. I think Kamala is the leader now. I mean, that's pretty much what everybody's saying. But you know, it's the first debate, so we're going to see some campaigning, some people trying to capitalize on. You know, who surprised me actually was who's New York, the guy from New York that...
Oh, Bill de Blasio.
Thank you, Bill de Blasio. I was shocked at how good he was. Okay, you ruined New York. Nobody's going to elect you, but right. You sound pretty good at the debate. I was like pretty impressed. I was like,
crazy.
Wow.
They are all crazy.
They're all crazy.
So as you look at this whole field, who is who's the most radical? Who's the one that you look at and say, there's a real danger to this person because they're a real true believer?
Yeah.
In radical revolution?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, who are you thinking of? I know you got somebody in mind, probably, if you're asking the question.
I think, well, Bernie Sanders, I mean, I'm talking about not for the election. I'm talking if they're president. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren.
Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren are for sure.
Yeah,
but you know, it's kind of a different question. Who do you think is doing well, and who do you think is the most dangerous?
So what I'm asking you is not. I'm talking about which one would you say
once they got in,
if they win, that's the most dangerous.
maybe Marianne Williamson, but no, but I do. Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, it's definitely Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, because not only Bernie's a true believer for sure. I mean, he went to USSR, not Russia, USSR on his honeymoon. I mean, that's a true believer. I mean, that's a little mental. So that guy's a full on communist. I mean, people are like, oh, he's a socialist like Denmark. Denmark's not socialist, first of all. Secondly, he's like a Soviet style communist. I mean, he's hardcore. Elizabeth Warren, I think, may be even more dangerous because she is an incredibly arrogant academic, kind of like Obama was, except Elizabeth Warren, I think she taught at Harvard, right? So she thinks of herself as intellectually superior. You know, it's the centralized state. It's the whole concept of the centralized state. Well, we're smarter than the people, so we can organize everything, and we're essentially like omnipotent, and we can make everything work. And it's that arrogance that I think is very corrupting, because then you start to implement things that you are confident about with, you know, and you just take yourself too seriously, and then you know, you end up nosediving the country, not realizing that you're imperfect, you know. I think she's a little bit too arrogant. I wouldn't want her to be.
It's we saw that with Obama, and the only other academic that we ever had was Woodrow Wilson.
Right.
Academics are really.
Yeah, because they just, and I've heard Woodrow Wilson was the same, like very arrogant. Very arrogant. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a nightmare. He was a nightmare. What is the thing that keeps you up at night? What is the technology, culture, politics? What's the thing that keeps you up at night?
I'm pretty good. I think that I used to be much more concerned about the direction of the world when I was younger, because I could see this sort of degradation of our traditional values. But especially since I started my channel, started to do, to some extent, what you're doing, not quite to that level, obviously. But, and you must have seen it to some degree, too, when you started working in this field. And I know you've been doing this for quite a while. But you start to see how many people care. And that is so heartening. Like, it's so great to see how many people respond. And some of the people are a little crazy. But I really get to interact with people on YouTube, because I'll read the comment section. I'll read my Twitter. I'll read all this stuff. As much as I can. I can't get to it all, but you get to see how passionate people are and how much people care and how many people are out there that care. And some people have very different visions, you know, of the future, and they have very different concerns than I have. But the fact that they care so much, and at least they're to some extent working within the real world, I'm so optimistic about how, you know, where we can go with so many people caring so much.
So are we as divided as we all think we are?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Think so?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think it comes back to that delusion that I mentioned before. If you genuinely believe that there are good guys and there are bad guys, and you can divide those groups by gender and race and religion, you are bound to, there's bound to be a lot of collateral damage. Because, yeah, sure, there's some straight white Christian guys who are total jerks, who are horrible, horrible people. But that's not all of us. You can't condemn entire demographics because of the sins of a few people. And a lot of the excuse is the sins of a few people hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you got the same skin color and gender as a man who lived 200 years ago and had a slave. So therefore, you're an evil person. So,
see, this is the problem. And Christianity has done, so, I shouldn't say that. Our houses of worship, our religions, mm-hmm. have done such a horrible job at keeping the message of the gospel to the individual. Mm-hmm. Everything is about individual salvation.
Absolutely.
Everything is. And, you know, this comes from that collective salvation nonsense that socialists have been pitching into our churches forever, mm-hmm. that we all can only really be redeemed when we're all in it together. Mm-hmm. That's not the message, and not the message of the country, not the message of Christ. Yeah. And I think our houses of worship have really dropped the ball. All of our religions they're struggling because how many of them really stand for things and can apply it to today's world?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, historically, like, the Catholic Church had so much power because you had this huge group of people in Europe who would go to church every Sunday, and it was a natural gathering place. It was a natural group, and if you tied those groups together and you had a centralized, you know, government of those groups, then you had a very powerful entity. And as you know, power corrupts, and you would get a lot of corrupt people in the church, mm-hmm. and then, like you would say, like this collectivist idea, you know, that kind of integrates reasonably well with that. Whereas, you know, I grew up Protestant, right? Non-denominational Protestant. Non-denominational Protestant is exactly what you're saying. Like, it's the focus is always on the individual. Even though, yeah, it's encouraged you go to church and, you know, all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. But it's your individual effort to become a better person. Mm-hmm. And you're right. The church doesn't always do the best job. But I was absolutely raised that it's an individual thing. Your faith is an individual thing. To me, that's a much better, healthier way of looking at it, because you don't tie your identity to any group in particular. Once you tie your identity to the group, then you become an identitarian. I mean, that you become one of these people that are like, well, I may not have done anything good in my life, but, you know, white people invented stuff, and I'm part of that. I'm part of that group.
Right.
So I must be great, too.
I must be great.
And it's like, to me, that's a very... It's a very defeatist attitude, because then you stop trying yourself to do something good. And to do something great in your life doesn't have to be, you know, to be president or to make major changes in the world, or to be, you know, a YouTube star, or to be, you know, the host of a major show, or to do something, you know, something that is traditionally considered great in our culture. You can be great just by being a good man, by being a good father, by being a good husband. I'm talking about men now, but, you know, because I'm a guy and I relate to that. but just being a good person and changing a person's life on an individual level is not only so it's an amazing thing to do on a one-to-one. Like, hearing people tell me something that I changed their life on a one-to-one level is so much more satisfying than... Just doing my show. Because even though my show is a fantastic way to try to shift people's views a little bit in a way that I think is good, it's that one-to-one connection that is really very powerful. Mm-hmm. And everybody can do that. Everybody can do that with their friends, with their relatives, with their family, just by being a good person, just by living a good example of a good man or a good woman, good wife, a good husband, a good son or a good daughter, you know. Which I wasn't always. Sorry, Mom.
Mr. Reagan.
Glenn Beck.
Thanks for being on.
Thank you, sir.
Just a reminder, I'd love you to rate and subscribe to the podcast and pass this on to a friend so it can be discovered by other people.